Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls. And well, Christine, this is by far the longest month I've experienced all week. And it's only airtime, which is like 2 p.m. Eastern.
Yes, it's very long. It's been a week and a day and a month and a week.
Well, this week has been the longest year of my career. And it was a shortened week due to Monday's commemoration of Memorial Day in the U.S. And before going any further, we naturally want to take a second to recognize the sacrifices made by persons in the armed forces and express our gratitude to all who've served. And that includes multiple members of the search community spanning several generations. Okay, so this month has been by far the longest decade in Google's 2.5-decade lifespan. From the disastrous launch of Gemini to the revelation that Google generative AI results were likely to relegate organic results to that hellscape found somewhere below the fold, to the stunningly and unanimously critical response of the world's media to Gemini results, Google was already having a catastrophic PR nightmare of a week. And then came the leak. Sometime early Monday, on May 27th, Mike King released his essay, Secrets from the Algorithm, Google's Search Internal Engineering Documentation Has Leaked, on his iPollRank blog. Around the same time, Rand Fishkin was posting his essay. An anonymous search shared thousands of leaked Google Search API documents with me. Every SEO should see them, on his SparkToro blog. Debate in the SEO community is now fully engaged. Already, people are marketing new techniques and strategies based on the findings they found in the documents that will go down in SEO history as the leak. The leak is of thousands of items of analytics that are said to be used by Google to rank websites. Now, there's no doubt the trove of documents originated at Google. In fact, Google itself has verified the documents are legitimate. There's also no doubt that Google uses or has used one or more, or maybe even some or all of the items noted in the documents as part of its ranking or testing or sorting or geolocating or event timing or some other functional algorithm or algorithms. It follows with the law of averages that in a large enough collection of things, some of those things will be relevant. The problem, as I see it, with this leak is we've learned a lot of stuff about a multifaceted something that we never fully understood in the first place. See, the problem is we don't know exactly how these elements fit together to make up Google. And before we go any further, Mike and Rand have both been guests on Webcology. And I think I can speak for Christine when I say I've sat at both at tables and restaurants, bars, hotel lobbies, luncheon tables, at conferences, and maybe for myself, even on stage at a much earlier stage in my own career. I tend to really like eccentric people, and I think it's safe to say both Mike and Rand could be described as eccentric people. I consider both to be industry friends, and I got a lot of respect for both characters. Nevertheless, they dropped what appears to be an 800-kilogram gorilla into our midst, and that gorilla needs to be thoroughly examined before we let it run wild. To help us do that, we have in studio one of the few SEOs we absolutely know to be qualified to dig into these documents. Ryan Jones is a Senior Vice President of SEO at Razorfish, which is one of the largest and oldest digital marketing agencies around. Ryan was instrumental in the dissection of Yandex about a year ago. He's another longtime friend. been on the guest on Webcology several times. And Ryan, welcome back to Webcology.
Hey, thanks for having me again. Great to be here.
Man, thank you for being here. This is
hey,
quite a week.
It's been a crazy week. And matter of fact, as soon as I get off this call, I'm recording my SMX Advanced session for that upcoming conference. And this week has really thrown a wrench in those plans because all the new information coming out so fast, it's been a whirlwind.
Okay, so actually, that's a really good place to start questions. The leak, this massive, massive trove of items from Google, is that going to affect how or what you put into a presentation you make to other people explaining what SEO is and how to perform it?
It depends. Is it
that is tattooed onto every one of us.
Yeah, it depends. Thanks for having me, guys. See you next week. Now, I think, and Mike King made this point, I don't know if it's going to present, if it's going to change high-level thinking of SEO, right? It's, our high-level thinking has always been, at least my high-level thinking has always been, build crap that people want to click on and want to go visit. Build a destination people want to go to, right? If you're doing that, great. It doesn't really change anything. But we all know selling in the things that lead to building a great destination people want to click on, whether it be content changes or technical changes or, you know, offsite changes, selling in that stuff is hard. And often clients ask us, how do you know that's going to drive the needle? How do you know that's going to make an impact, right? Where's my proof from Google? And we don't ever have proof from Google, but now at least we can point to this and be like, look, we don't know how they're using this, but we know Google cares about this. We know they're collecting this type of data or this thing. And that can help us sell in some of the stuff that we know works when clients are skeptical. So I feel like that's probably going to be my number one use case of this data.
It, let's take a step back and explain to people who don't know what we're talking about. We're talking about the leak, these files, this data. What are we talking about?
So essentially, it's a proto buff. It's basically instructions for an API. It's here's the data we have. Here's some definitions of the data, and here's how to use the functions, right? Like the function is going to return this type of number or string or whatnot. It's high level descriptions of functions. And so it's documentation for an API that somebody accidentally put live that wasn't supposed to go live with the actual API documentation, right? They included all this other stuff that shouldn't have been part of the legit Google API documents. But that's all we know. And it is important to caveat, and I think you did it in the intro, Jim, is we don't know if they're using this stuff or how they're using this stuff. And, you know, but we do know they're collecting this stuff, and this data points, all of, you know, thousands of them, are available to Google engineers to use in some context. And we can speculate about the context all we want, right? Are they using it as a ranking factor? Are they using it as in machine learning? Are they using it as the input into machine learning or the output to compare the machine learning values to see if it's good or not, right? There's a whole lot of nuances that we just don't know, but knowing what they are looking at and what they're storing and knowing what's available to them can really help change our mental model of a search engine.
Okay, so a lot of people have, there's items in here, such as dwell time, click-through rates, the influence of user behavior that Google has adamantly said over and over and over again, we don't use, we don't care about. Anyone who suggests that we do is crackers and shouldn't be listened to in the first place. And they're using it somehow. So naturally, a lot of people are miffed, to pissed off, to feeling outright injured. What do you think? Did Google lie about this?
So I don't think anybody from Google intentionally lied to us. I do think people parsed words carefully. And I do think it's possible, and I can give you an example. It's possible that a statement like we don't use clicks in rankings and the stuff that we learned in the antitrust trials and the stuff that Rand showed in his experiments and what we're seeing here can all be true at the same time. And it takes a lot of understanding and knowledge. So we do know when it comes to clicks that Rand showed a long time ago that if you get a whole bunch of people to click on something, the ranking will temporarily increase. And so we do know that Google's looking at trends. right? Whether or not those clicks are a direct ranking factor, we do know that the algorithm is smart enough to say, hey, this thing's getting a lot of clicks right now. Maybe it's important right now. And that makes a lot of sense with trending news and news search, or you know, trending topics. But he also showed that as soon as the clicks went away, it fell down. So is there some sort of boost for that? Probably. But is a trend boost considered ranking in Google? So can they say we don't use clicks in ranking because a temporary trending boost isn't really ranking? Maybe that's true, right? Maybe that's a word parsing. But when it comes to the other stuff, like, you know, the clicks in there, and we saw that too in this data, there are decay factors and features to say, hey, you know, like if we're going to look at clicks, there's also a decay factor in there with it, which speaks to looking at trends and whatnot. You know, is it trending right now? And the decay factors, all that fun stuff. I can geek out computer science. We won't. But in machine learning, it's very possible, right, that they're using clicks to train a model, but not as a ranking factor. And what I mean by that is machine learning has X values and Y values. And I'm trying to simplify this on the fly, but you feed in a whole ton of data and X values. And what it does is it tries to predict weights for every one of those X values so that it mirrors the Y values you give it. So think of a curve, like a graph from algebra in high school. You give it a line and then a whole bunch of data points, and it tries to arrange those data points so they fit that line by weighting each one of them individually to fit that curve. And what I think NavBoost and the click stuff is doing, this is just my hypothesis, I think the clicks and the click-through rate and all that stuff are the Y values. And so they're feeding in data they know about all the websites, you know, your title tag, and is the query in the title, is the query in the header, right? You know, what's your cosine similarity, your BM25, right? You know, entities on the page, all this, you know, links, page rank, all these features. And they're saying, hey, give these weights so they model what we know about the most clicked on sites. And then they're taking those weights into the algorithm, but not the actual click data. So if that's the case, then it's 100% true to say we don't use clicks in ranking, but they use clicks to train everything. So it's the word parsing thing that you were getting at, Christine. I think both can be true.
Yeah, I agree. I just want to add this little bit of information that I know you know, Ryan, but not all listeners will know. In the DOJ documents, a lot of people like stopped on the first slide, which was like, we use click data, but the rest of the slides were how they use it in an aggregate to refine the search for the next user, which is pretty much what you're saying. So you can actually see that in the DOJ document slides.
Yeah, so I think it's all true, right? We don't use clicks in ranking because they don't. They use it in training a model that's used in ranking. So it's word parsing, but you know, it's 100%, other than the trending thing Rand showed, I'm seeing nothing to prove that if you go buy thousands of clicks to your website, you're going to rank for it in 2 weeks after those thousands of clicks goes away.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Ryan. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
Oh, no, and that's what a lot of people take it to mean, right? They think, okay, I got more clicks than someone else for this specific query. I'm going to rank higher for it. And you might temporarily, but long term, I don't take anything in here to mean that. And I'm seeing a lot of people on Twitter take it to mean things like that. So again, it's like Mike said, people are looking for their keyword and they're searching that in the document. And then they're just saying, you know, oh, look, it has this keyword I searched, so it proves my bias. Well, that's the wrong thing.
That actually leads to a question. I remember when this document dumped on Monday, I went through it, my first looks through it. And I was, okay, that confirms that, this confirms that, and that confirms that. And these are all things I've always believed to be true. And now I really badly want these documents to be true because I've seen that, and that, and it's, you know, sparkled my confirmation bias in the biggest of ways. Now I'm sort of learning that we're not entirely sure what that and that exactly means. So when going through these documents, Ryan or Christine, what should SEOs do when they see this, that, and whatnot?
Well, I think that Ryan's hitting on some really important points. And Ryan also has a background in information retrieval and education and computer science. So he looks at it from a different way than most SEOs. But Ryan's is the right way to look at it, because I've looked at the raw files, not the ones that were produced in searchable databases, but literally the raw files one by one. And there's a lot of them, there's literally nothing you could take from them. If you don't know the context, you don't know what the variable sets are they're talking about, you don't know what goes in their code values. So you have to be really cautious, as Ryan said. And also on the thing like the clicks, like Ryan said, it's a parsing, right? It's not a ranking signal, but in trends, it might rank you temporarily. And I did know a hacker who used a tool that like went there and just click 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 clicked all day, but they always went away within like 24 hours. So we don't know context. We don't know how they tie together. We don't know if they're even part of ranking signals at all, because search features is also something they use in machine learning as a term. So Ryan may have hit it spot on, and I see very SEO few SEOs talking about it, wish I could talk today, is that this may be about training machine learning.
Yeah, and we don't know which of these features are used in search or which are used to actually maybe populate Search Console or to create a debug tool for the developers. We've all been at conferences when we've seen Google engineers, pull up a debug tool on their computer to figure out why something's an issue with search engines. I remember developers no longer at Google doing this at Ungagged years and years ago and showed us, he's like, oh yeah, that's an issue with our search engine when he got all the data back. For an issue that somebody gave him. And we don't know that some of these values could just be used for debugging stuff or for populating Search Console. Like somebody on Twitter was freaking out about like health data and location data. And I was like, how do you know that's not just used to make your dashboard on your Google Watch to show you your health data and for nothing else?
Actually, yes.
Like
Yeah,
you.
because I'm sorry again. I'm sorry. My headphones are cutting off. I so apologize, Ryan. I just
No,
want to
I'm
agree with you and say that in that data jump, because I have the files, I'm not searching a database, and I've looked at them like, file by file. There's stuff in there about phone calls, about email notifications, about phone notifications. So you're 100% correct. It could be about your watch.
Yeah. So, or your Google, I won't say the name because I think I have mine turned on, but your smart assistant on your desktop. There's a lot of NLP stuff in there in understanding a voice query for that assistant. And the skeptical say, well, could they use that NLP logic for search too? Yeah, and they probably do, but we don't know it.
So where are the clues? Where are the items that people can grab inferences or ideas from?
There's some cool stuff in here. One of the cool things I liked was in that NLP understanding for assistant stuff, but it talked about location searches. And in the comments for like the notes for one of the functions, it said, it gave an example of like Starbucks, nearest Starbucks, and how it rewrites the query to Starbucks and then changes the location value to where the user's searching from and just drops the word near. And I thought that really interesting. That if Google Assistant's doing that, could Google Search be doing that? Because how many local search people will tell you, no, I put the word near me in my title and I ranked higher for people searching plumber near me. Like,
And it's actually listed in Google Local, and Google's developer documents, which SEOs read too far too little of, that it's by geolocation. So it's close. What's closest to you is how they list those things. Why near me isn't a thing. So that definitely fits to that item that they would make it the nearest one to you.
Yeah, and I also found something really interesting for language and country. There's a whole lot of signals about the radius in which 50% of this site gets 50% of its traffic from this radius, or 50% of its searches really from this radius. And I thought that interesting because we all see examples where the sites from one country's ranking in another country's search results. And if they're actually looking at user search behavior and saying, hey, most of the people searching this are coming from a different country, instead of actually looking at your on-page signals, to me, that's really interesting to see that they're using user signals to determine language and country settings. Or they could
That
be.
makes a lot of sense.
The
Yeah,
variable for it, they could be.
So I asked earlier if there was anything in these documents that would change how you described SEO to in a presentation or at a conference. Is there anything in these documents that have changed your understanding of search, how Google works, or of SEO itself?
They're slightly. I mean, I've changed since the DOJ leak and then this. I've changed my internal definition of how I talk about SEO. And it used to be like, build something that's crawlable that matches consumer intent. And I've kind of updated that to build a destination that users want to click on. Like that is my new definition of SEO, is build something that users want to click on. And I specifically started saying click in there, whether or not they use clicks. It's clear to me from this leak that that's what Google's trying to reward. They're trying to reward, again, whether or not they're actually using clicks to do it, they're trying to reward the sites that users want to click on. And so it's changed change my definition for clients. Again, this is all super high level, 1,000-foot thinking, but it's changed that. Actionably at the tactical level, I don't think it's changed a lot of tactics that I would do. You know, I mean, I want to dig in more. We haven't had time. I think if I was a spammer, there's a lot of things that would change because there's a lot of values in here that specifically relate to page quality and spam. But I'm not really doing the spam stuff, or at least not that I'm willing to talk about. And so I don't think it changes much, you know, for the white hat SEOs. But if you're someone trying to trick the algorithm, there's a lot of things in here you can look at. Like there's some explanations about seeded page rank, which again, Bill Slosky covered years ago, that I don't think really caught on into our industry. But, you know, there's some explanations about various other spam things, but it's clear to me that they're all machine learning. And so my advice for that would be try not to look like the other spam sites. And I think we saw that with helpful content. A lot of the sites that were helpful content that, you know, experts were doing, you know, they just look like the spam sites. And so I think we're seeing that.
I'm glad you mentioned helpful content. I've been seeing in Reddit and other forums people who are desperate. They've committed their lives. This is their post pandemic new job, and they got wiped out by helpful content. The helpful content update. A lot of them are going through these documents looking for magic bullets, things that will save them, life buoys. Are they in there?
No. There's no one thing to recover from helpful content. And honestly, we don't know because no one we know of has actually recovered from helpful content yet and done a case study about it. You know, if you are, I'm sure everyone would love to host you. But there's no one quick fix or easy thing, right? It's like, and I've seen some people like, oh, you need to add an author profile. Like, no, that's not going to recover you. Like maybe you should. Yeah. If it's written by a real author. Like if you had a real person write this and they're an expert, go for it. Users might like that, but that's not going to recover you.
What it's worth is documents that are specifically about authors in these documents.
There is, but most of that seems in the news section, which makes
it
a
is.
Lot of
sense. Yeah. Go ahead.
So, but
yeah, it's a news and microblogging, and then there's one little piece about if you link to an author, they should get a boost, which is links. That has nothing to do with authorship. So yeah, I looked thoroughly through the documents. I found nothing. I found author only mentioned twice.
The reason I jumped and actually interrupted Ryan on that one is, again, that was, I think, something people would be, author itself is something that people would be grasping for, because that was mentioned around helpful content at one time, and please won't it save me?
I think Ryan is correct that the helpful content may be a bit of the machine learning gone awry on how sites look like other sites. As John said 2 weeks ago, and I can't get clarification, that it's not just your content. You have to look at other things. So I just think, honestly, I'm going to say it. It's just my opinion. I think the machine learning is broken and they haven't figured out how to fix it.
We know it's machine learning, but I think the problem is we're broken too as SEOs and as our community, because like spam or not, we're all most of the niche sites are using the same templates. They're using the same elements on the page, right? They all have the same table of contents and the same looking author profiles. And, you know, they're using the same code. So it all looks the same, right? They're all using the same best practices for how to do a title tag and a heading and paragraphs. And they all have like, they all look cookie cutter of each other, whether or not it's good value or not. Google doesn't understand that. They see words, right? But they don't know if it was written by a real person or not. But, you know, I see nothing in here that says you have to have your article about tires medically reviewed by a random doctor in Pakistan and put that in your author bio, which somehow we got out of helpful content for some reason, right? You see that all the time. Like, this article has been medically reviewed, even though it's not a medical article. Like, there's nothing in there to support that. So I think it's going to be, you know, it's not one easy thing. And my advice to those people would be, you might have to do a site redesign to really get there, because it's not going to be a quick fix.
Okay, Ron, I really want to be conscious of your time. I know that you're juggling your way into our recording between
which
meetings right now.
Very much appreciate.
I could probably go another 5 or 6 minutes here.
Okay, cool. Great. Thank you. Is this leak actually an 800 kilogram gorilla?
I want to say yes, even though there's nothing actionable, like, oh my God, make this change to your page right now. I think it's huge in the context of our mental model of how search engines work has been stuck in the year 2000, right? And Mike actually just put a post live on Search Engine Land while we were talking this, having this conversation, an update on some of his findings from this league. So I would say go read that. But and he vaguely mentions it here because I've been reading it while I'm talking, is that a lot of the things we base SEO on are stuff that a lot of us on this call and everybody in the industry, the older people that you talked about, we did in the early 2000s. And our mental model hasn't changed much. You know, we still talk keyword density when search engines use cosine similarity and best match 25 and other things like that. We still talk TF-IDF, which is not an actual thing they use. It's built into like best match 25 calculations and stuff. But like machine learning, right? AI and vectors. There's a stuff in here about vectors. Like it's time our mental model of how a search engine works updates, which can lead to better SEO. And I think this is great for doing that for the people that actually have the time, that actually want to spend the time to dive in.
How are you going to be using these documents going forward?
Well, I don't know if I don't want to plug, but I'm launching a tool soon called SERP Recon, probably sometime in June. But I've already come up with an idea for two more metrics to include in that tool based on what I've seen in the leak here. And so like, you know, I'll tell you one of the metrics. It's because it's kind of a basic metric. But one of the things that they're actually looking at here is the ratio of header tokens that are covered by the title. And that's probably so that they can compare that to the query tokens then to figure out what to use for your rewriting your title tag. That's my guess. But I never thought to compare the page header to the title tag to the query, break it down to tokens and use that as ratios to get learnings about, you know, does the header match the title tag and do both match the query? How do they relate? So that's one metric I took out of here, just a trivial example that I'm going to start building into my tools and doing some cool stuff with, which I'll share the cool stuff later. But so I'm looking at new things and new ways of looking at data and new things that Google's looking at that, you know, make me question, if I was coding a search engine, what would I do with this? And take me down some routes. Like one thing is, there's a metric for like website vectors, and there's a metric for a page vector, and they're actually looking at the distance of that page vector to the website vector. So that could be helpful content update or some spam update. But to me, that was really interesting, the concept of the website vector and the distance of each page from the overall website vector.
Has there been anything in here that's really surprised you?
No. No, there's been stuff that we theorized and thought they might be looking at, and it has confirmed those theories, which same thing with the Yandex leak did. The Yandex leak confirmed a lot of theories about things that we thought they were doing or not doing. But there's nothing in here that like greatly shocked me of like, oh my God, that's new, or no one theorized that, no one thought about that. If anything, it confirmed some biases. Well, maybe confirmed some biases, right? We don't know they're using it. We don't know how they're using it, but we do know that they're looking at it.
Okay, at the risk of setting off another link selling arms race, is domain authority a thing?
There's a thing called site authority in there, right?
Yeah. So what is that thing?
I don't know. It's not very well labeled of what it is. And so is it domain authority in the sense of, does it match the Moz metric, or are they using it the same way we are?
No. Moz measures the way Moz measures, right?
Right. But it's interesting. I'm trying to pull it up while we're talking and then see their definition of it. But so it just says site authority converted from quality NSR, site authority applied in QSTAR, yeah. Right? And so, you know, we know that QSTAR, well, we don't know exactly what QSTAR is, but there's a lot of theories here. You know, QSTAR is basically their ordering and bidding engine. Mike can talk about that way better than I can. But there is a site authority field, but it says converted from quality. So what was quality that they converted it to site authority? And so my guess is there is some sort of metric that they're using for the site authority, but I don't think it works the way we think it works. given that it says converted from quality, which was another metric. So
yeah,
there's a lot more to it that we don't get. Go ahead, Christine.
There's a document called Compressed Quality Signals, and it has a joiner called indexing_doc_joiner_data_version. Those are the ones where the information is coming from. So, and you're right, like the doc joiner, which has like all the variable definitions for the anyone who is using this, is massive. Like it's one of the few massive documents in here. So I would agree with you. It's not saying what people think domain authority is.
Yeah, it's, and honestly, like the concept of domain authority itself, like considering your domain links to all your pages, you really don't need domain authority. It's covered in PageRank, at least for how the SEO industry thinks it is, right? Like if you have PageRank, you pretty much have domain authority because your domain's authority is passed down in the PageRank to all your internal links. And so I don't know that they would need it in the way SEOs think it is, but there's definitely something for that site's authority. And it's definitely site, right? Which could be, in Google's terms, site doesn't have to be domain. It could be a directory, a subdirectory, right?
Sure.
And I don't want to get into that debate, but it very well could be that too.
That's a really good point. That some of the terms, I think a lot of times because of cognitive bias, people look at a term and think it's what they know the term to be. But it doesn't mean that if you had the bigger picture, that's actually what the term means. Just like search features can be machine learning terms as opposed to SEO search features, like Google search features.
Yeah, and and even within Google, right? Because we got into this and Danny tweeted at me that they're the same thing. But like when we use features and factors and tokens as an engineer, they mean all slightly different things.
Yes.
Right? Like factors have weights, features do not. That's just based on a definition. And Danny said when Google PR put stuff out that they use those terms and interchangeably, but and Google PR folks might, but I promise engineers use those terms to mean specific things because that's just how our brains are wired.
Which is how you can tell when you read a Google Doc, who wrote it, because it's like with CWVs, Core Vitals, and we're talking about Danny Sullivan, by the way, if anyone's not sure. That it'll call them a ranking signal, a ranking factor, and part of a ranking system, depending on who wrote the document in which part of Google Docs. So the engineers are very specific, the other ones are not.
Yeah, so I mean, part of this is like, you almost need a glossary to understand a lot of this stuff, because while we can think of what a lot of these terms mean, some of them may not mean what we think we mean, like site, right? Or authority.
Yeah, like site.
It might mean something, or NSR, that's everywhere, right? And I talked to a Zoogler and asked them what NSR means, and they told me, I can't tell you specifically, but it's an internal term. It's nothing that we need to worry about. You know, it's just an internal acronym that's not an actual concept in information retrieval or like something that we could Google and learn more about if we knew what it stood for. But this ex-Googler also wouldn't tell me what it stood for. So take that for how you want to take that.
So what do you think about Google's response to the dump? I guess we could call it a dump. It's not really a leak because it accidentally published itself. It's called Yoshi.
Yeah.
It accidentally published itself. So, and it's been there for quite some time. Apparently someone had identified that it's been there 2 years.
Yeah, but
so yeah. So it's
Google's reaction. How's it been?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they kind of acknowledge that it's real, and they can't disacknowledge that it's real because it's on a GitHub page that Google owns, right?
Yeah.
They can't say that's fake, right? Like,
yeah, it's not ours.
But I don't think they're going to give us any clarity on it. I mean, I wouldn't. I think they're going to say, and exactly what they said, is take it with a grain of salt. You're missing context, right? Unfortunately, we can't provide the context.
You can't. What?
Like, I mean, you can, they're not going to, and I don't know that it'd be in their best interest to give us the context, because the more context they give us, the more someone like me would try to abuse it.
Moving forward, how should we frame the debate within our own community? We're not going to stop talking about this for a very, very, very long time. And I got a feeling that it's going to get really personal really fast. Is there a way to look at this without being dicks about it?
I wish. I mean, we're already seeing some egos in the space of I told you so and I was right. And look, I found this word. It confirms my bias. And I'm not calling out any one specific person here at all. But there is that temptation. And I would say just don't go down that road because none of that matters. I think we need to look at this objectively and we need to, you know, look at it from a computer science standpoint. And we need to not make assumptions and not try to confirm our biases. Like if you're trying to confirm a bias, you're approaching this the wrong way, right? It should be trying to increase our understanding of how things work. And, you know, as we go forward, we can tie stuff back to this. We can be like, oh, hey, Google said this thing, or, you know, this algorithm update launched. Ooh, we saw this data point in this. I wonder if that's related. Maybe, you know, we can use it for more theory and conjecture, but I think we need to frame it as scientific, not as like, not ego. And I'm not saying there are people with ego or anything, but there's the temptation to use it for ego and clickbait is there versus the temptation to just use it for science.
Okay, Ryan, the temptation to ask you 100 more questions is there, but I know you got stuff you got to do, and I don't want to keep you from your 101 extra meetings. So, Ryan Jones, Vice President of SEO at Razorfish, man, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you, Ryan. Yep. I appreciate you making the time.
Later.
Hey, friends, that was a total treat. That was Ryan Jones from Razorfish. And as I said, Ryan's been around forever. Razorfish has been around forever. Razorfish's clients, I mean, they're enormously, and they've been around forever. And I really dig Ryan's take on this, and I really appreciated him coming on to do that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think Ryan has a very sober check on it, right? That because it can be a lot of things. It's like when you have the five blind men in the proverb, like looking at the elephant with their hands, mm-hmm. right? And each thinks they see something different because they don't know that it's an elephant. They don't have the context that it's an elephant. We're kind of like that. We don't have any context for these, right? They could be machine learning. I think Ryan has very good points that a lot of this could be just output for machine learning training. So I think it might confirm some bias. Like I looked at it and went, oh, okay, well, I knew that. So it just makes me go, all the things I actually knew, if this is a search document, I know are now true 100% as opposed to like 98%. But I think that people have to be really careful about making declarations. I've seen a whole bunch of declarations today. Oh, it does this, it does this. We don't know what it does. So I think
there's a whole bunch of new services out there in LA.
Yes.
Like seriously, there are people who are selling their understanding of the Google data dump.
And also when they get into the ego part, and not calling anybody out, I'm not going to use any names, but just as a general comment, that, you know, telling people that people have dismissed this, like, right, like there's nothing for me here. I already knew all this stuff. We can't confirm what it is. So I'm moving on. They're getting criticism and they really shouldn't, because when you approach something like this, if you approach it from the academic or scientific point of view, you examine it and you may dismiss it. You may decide it doesn't have any value for me, or may decide that it's not really what you guys think it is. I think it's something else. And that should be respected too. Like if you're going to have a real true discussion about it, you have to respect all opinions that are, you know, not crazy.
Well, absolutely. And I think that at this time, that's a little harder for some people to remember, because I've never in my career experienced a time when people are this angry at one of the venues we work in. People are so angry with Google right now.
And I'd like to say something about that. One of the people that really surprised me today, and you probably don't know him, Jim, as you're not on Twitter much, and he's in the Megathread. Megathread's a bunch of SEOs that talk to each other every day. Is Laurent Boley. And Laurent, you know, he comes from the Black Hat side, and he's usually hypercritical of everyone at Google. And he wrote a nice post today to tell people, like, hey, you kind of got to stop being angry at, like, John and Martin and Gary, because they are just there to do a job, to communicate to us what they can. They may not know things. They may not be told things. They may know things and have to, as Ryan said, parse them. You know, like, my favorite parsing is when someone asks John Mueller, do you do a subdomain or do you do a subpath? And he's like, we crawl them the same. Yes, John. Yes, you do crawl them the same. But that doesn't answer which one you should use, right? But obviously, he's not trying to be push someone in the wrong direction. He's trying to say what he can say. And people have to remember, these aren't our friends. I mean, they may be our friends separately at a conference or something, but when they're representing Google, they're representing a multi-trillion dollar corporation that has many, many, many rules. And they are very, very small players, even though in our world, they're very big players. They're very small players in the Google world. And they might not know something. They might not be told something. They may be told something that's untrue because Google wants that to be the message, right? So we have to be a lot kinder to them because they have a very difficult job and they're not purposely trying to tell people wrong things. There are things they just can't say, or there's things that I can see John do it. Like, I know I can't really say this, but I really want to help this person. So let me try to find the best way I can parse it, so at least I can give them some information. So I think people need to be more kind. Google's not your buddy. They're a multi-trillion dollar corporation that has to cover, you know, be a dark black box on some things. They can't just go to the world and say, here's our algorithms. Good luck if you like your SEOs. You know, you just can't do that.
For goodness sake, when I worked for Webmaster Radio, like when I worked directly in the office for Webmaster Radio, we were going all over the place to conferences, and we were the live on the spot radio network for all the shows. Eh?
Yeah.
And there was a number of other media outlets. We'd all gather and drink and hang out together and talk about how we were covering stories and stuff. And a lot of them were really interested in what Webmaster Radio was doing and how we were doing it. And they'd ask questions about our operation all the time. And I don't know if I ever, you know, well, I did lie frequently. I didn't mean to lie. I mean, that wasn't the point. I was more misdirecting than anything else, because we really had a secret sauce that was working and special.
And
Darren would have taken my head off if I gave it away.
Yeah, and if you're Google, you're on the stock market. So actually, there's legal things involved with that too. And the other thing is, I know I do have an issue with Google on the helpful content update. I know Google translates everything they do into, math, basically. It's math. And they know what they're looking for, or they know if they broke the machine learning, and they're not telling us. But that's not because John and Martin and Gary are being jerks and, oh, we should hate them. I get angry at Google, the company. But I don't get angry at the people that are communicating to us, because you and I both remember the days when we had nobody but Matt Cutts and his black book at a conference, and maybe if you wrote a blog post. Like, we had no information.
And also, please remember, and Ryan just said so himself, if Google did give away that granular information at that level and was very, very, very honest and transparent, we would so take advantage of that. I would do it in New York second. I would absolutely be all over that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and not in even a bad way. Just, oh, they gave us information.
It's my job.
That's my job. We're not, I can always, it bothers me, I always get confused with affiliate marketers who use SEO, but you know, the ones who are spelling like Viagra, the same thing as an SEO professional trying to get their client traffic. But I do think that they do the best they can. I think they really try. I do think they actually care. I also do think they're put in an impossible position every day to try to represent what Google allows them to represent, and to give us as much information as they can without violating anything in their own contracts. So remember, these guys have signed a lot of documents too, that they are not going to give away the secret sauce. So, which is also, by the way, with this, the leak, which we now, of course, we know is published by them by accident to their GitHub. It's less of a leak and more just like, oops, publish our definitions. So the person that gave it to Rand wasn't really participating in, you know, a leak, more as I found this stuff online.
I don't know if people remember this, because there was a time before the leak and a time after the leak. And before the leak, which is just a couple of days ago, Google was telling you to eat rocks. I mean, Google wasn't, but Gemini was sometimes, if you asked it the right questions.
Yeah.
It would even tell you how to eat rocks and quantities of rocks to eat, and that geologists, who are, you know, as you and I know, experts about rocks, tell you to eat rocks, which is not a good thing, because that'll break your teeth.
Yeah,
it really, bad. Even if it's gravel. That was the story before the leak, and that would have been the story that would have actually probably been what dominated today's show. I'm almost positive that would have been what dominated today's show, but it didn't, because it was a big leak. So, what do you do about a problem like Matilda, Maria, I mean, whatever?
That's now in my head. What do you do about like Maria?
Well, what do you do about Matilda here? Like, Google is
Nothing.
giving horrible answers. And, or Gemini, I should say, is giving whole Google's AI is giving horrible answers. This is wrong. It's scary. I don't think it's going to lead most search users to eat rocks, but I do believe it'll lead a lot of search users to distrust Google, which, kind of hurts my business in a lot of ways. Here's the thing that bugs me. There's, according to the CEO of Google himself, there's not a heck of a lot they can do about it.
It really isn't. That's just, remember, I've said this since like, I don't know, over a year ago. It's not meant for search. And the reason it's not meant for search is it's in a large language model and it's doing text generation. And when you do text generation without actually retrieving just from the text, one text or two texts, you can be wrong a lot because it's just making up the most, it's just pattern recognition, basically. It goes out of trains. It identifies patterns, it uses tokens. Tokens are just parts of words. And then it regenerates what it thinks is the right thing. Oh, I shouldn't say think or right thing. It doesn't have cognitive sense. I cannot speak today. I have big words I'm stumbling on. It doesn't have the ability to understand what it's writing. It doesn't know what it's writing. It has no knowledge of what it's writing. It doesn't think, it doesn't reason. So when it puts something wrong, it's just because it didn't really have the information it needed to do the correct response. And so it just posted what was the most likely next word. And in this case, it was eating rocks. In other cases, to feel calm, you should take a toaster to the bathroom with you and get in a bathtub. Things like that. Or how to make
No, hold it. You're
chlorine
supposed to get in the
gas.
bathtub with the toaster?
Yes, that's how you should be calm. Yes.
Oh,
Yeah.
I
And
mean, I knew about
people.
it taking to the bathroom with you, but I didn't know about getting it into the bathtub with it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I've been doing wrong all these years.
And somebody posted, somebody posted, you can be very calm when you're dead. Someone posted today the patent for SGE, which I've read before, and they don't use a straight LLM. So you can actually find the source material, unlike you wouldn't be able to do this with Copilot or definitely not for ChatGPT. But in Google, you can often find the source material. And a lot of this is coming from Reddit. The glue, you remember last time we talked about cheese on pizza with the glue? That was an 11-year-old girl posted that. Well, they assumed girl, maybe it was a boy, who knows? Yes, that was a Reddit post. So yeah, they can't fix it though, because large language models aren't broken.
No, they're
It's
doing,
broken
actually, they're
for
doing exactly what they're supposed to do in the
yes.
wrong application.
Exactly. They were never meant for this application. And so they're not broken. And so the only way to fix them would be to create something different, which I follow a lot of these industry executives, researchers, scientists on LinkedIn, and they're looking at doing. They're starting to look to go other what directions because they thought large language models might get them to AGI, the holy grail of artificial intelligence, but it's not going to. And so since they can't really find a lot of good purposes for something that produces wrong information, they don't want to keep investing the amount of money they're investing in it. So we'll see if that happens. I mean, it's just talk right now.
No,
But it
this
was
is
never
actually going
meant
to
for
be really
search.
interesting. I'm going to be at a conference in Toronto in a couple of weeks called Collision, and at Collision, Collision is just this like 70,000 person meeting of tech, money, and startups, and you put the three together, like the big houses, the big investors, and the young inventors. And it's a crazy and often terrifying environment. Terrifying in that you have like really beautiful, idealistic people who are suddenly learning what the money wants, and also learning how the big houses, the Googles, the Metas, Perplexity, etc., how they plan to use the startups' technologies. It's a weird environment. It's 3 days of just intensity at a 100,000, 70,000 person scale.
I am jealous. I wish I could be there with you because there's some really,
What's
by the way,
happening in
go ahead.
LLMs is going to totally change
Yes.
what people expected out of this conference, and I honestly can't wait to see how that really affects the vibe there.
Yeah, it's going to be very different. But right now, this is at the academic level. So we'll see when it makes it up to the marketing C-level at the heads of these companies. But
Well, and that's the fun thing. I mean, it could be at the academic level today, but we're all using AI tools for this, that, and whatever. And a couple of years ago, almost 2 years ago, do you realize that this is the on Saturday is the beginning of the last month of the second quarter of 2024? That means 2024 is basically half over.
shush.
Just 20 months ago, AI was brought into public hands. LLM modeled AI was brought into public hands. And people have been using it to do whatever since then, whatever application they want. Some people had wild dreams for it. Some people had, relatively simple, more basic uses for it. But I think a lot of the wild stretches of the imagination have gone by the wayside. They're not interesting anymore because they never would have worked in the first place. And people have found that out.
Yeah, it's sort of like when you like I have friends who come to Vegas and they start walking towards that thing and they're like, and 2 hours later texting me, we're not at that thing yet. I'm like, yeah, that's like 8 miles. That's why you're not at that thing. So a lot of the LLM industry, what I'm or I should say researchers and academics I'm seeing were really super excited because they saw that thing on the horizon, which is AGI, and they thought this would be a way to get there. But now with the cost, the expense, the errors, the issues, it just isn't seen probably as the good path, like a path with a lot of holes and broken sidewalk, and maybe they want to try another one.
Well, we will see. I think, you know what, I think it was a necessary path, and it has been a good path because there's a lot of incredible uses for large language model AI. There really is. But again, search engine, clearly not one of them.
Not one of them, no. No, it's not. I mean, Perplexity is still continuing, but I kind of imagine by year next year we might hear that they've fallen by the wayside.
Well, I'm trying to get an interview with the CEO of Perplexity, who is going to be at the Collision Conference. I'm really, really crossing my fingers on this one.
Awesome. By the way, for those who haven't read it, The Man Who Killed Search, the author Ed Zichon will be there as well.
No way, really? Will he?
Yeah, I sent it to you, but I didn't think he saw it. So I just want to tell people that maybe we'll get lucky and Jim will get an interview with him. Because I
No,
know the industry
Jim
read
is
that.
absolutely getting lucky and taking this guy to dinner if he has to. I'm getting an interview
Exactly.
with him, no question about
Awesome.
that.
Yeah. So if you haven't read
So
it, The Man Who Killed Search is a great read for all the stuff we've been talking about.
we got a couple of minutes left. Where do you want to go? We got a couple of stories on the grid here.
Well, the good thing is I think we could get through them pretty quickly because we don't have a lot of stories today because we had such a big story. So I think real quick, we want to probably mention that disinformation, OpenAI's tools are being used to create disinformation. They are trying to be proactive about it and shutting those accounts down, which is good because we know on social media they're often left to, keep duplicating themselves over and over again. So that's good news. Also, we did find out the real reasons that Sam Altman was fired last year, one of them being very interesting. The board that was supposed to oversee OpenAI didn't know they were launching ChatGPT till they saw it on Twitter.
No, they just sort of came into work one day and
Yes.
somebody said, "We're live."
No, they saw it on Twitter. He did not tell them. He did not tell the board that was overseeing him that they were launching it. So they discovered on Twitter. Also, apparently, the like other ones in the big tech bro pack is also apparently a very difficult manager who treats his employees pretty awfully. And they're afraid to counter him because he holds up their compensation packages like he just did with a few that left. So the reason nobody left OpenAI when he was fired wasn't because of their loyalty to him, but because of their fear what he would do. This is from the woman on the board. This is on the record, so this
As
isn't me.
explained in an article published in The Verge.
Actually, there's multiple articles published. I just picked The Verge because it was a short one that would give us, we didn't have to spend 10 minutes reading. So yeah, so apparently the charges are from the board, Ms. Toner from the board, that they fired him for very good reasons. So I thought people should know. We should know those things early. then we've got Twixter is going to be having to sit in SEC probe about how Elon Musk bought the company. We all know that he didn't disclose that he was over in SEC. I think it's rules, maybe law. I think it's law. Yeah, it broke the law. You have to disclose when you bought a certain percentage of a company, and he did not do that, and that's how he managed to get the owning share of Twitter. So, and then he got forced into the buy after that. So the SEC is calling him in, and he is going to have to sit in front of them for 5 hours and see if he'll get. I don't know what they're going to do. They fine him a lot, and it never
that's
matters.
That's going to be the most uncomfortable hearing. Well, actually, it won't be the most uncomfortable hearing, but it will be up there. Mr. Musk, can you please explain in detail how you bought Twitter? I was really stoned, and I was well, I told it. Them I would do it. I told them.
Yeah, once man, you're over
5%, that'll be a weird hearing.
Yeah, once you're over 5%, yeah, that's my excuse. I was so high, I didn't realize I was over 5%. Once you're over 5%, you have to disclose that stake within 10 days of purchase so that the company can react. And he didn't, and he had 9.2%. It's almost double the percentage he was legally allowed to have without disclosure.
Okay.
It's kind of a big deal, but you know, he makes so much money and they just fine him, and so it never really makes a big difference. But he is up for that.
Well, now you know why he needs that like $55 billion. Eh? This is it. SEC fines could really add up.
Exactly. And then now we got two quick Google ones. One is really nice. It's that Google Maps is adding wheelchair accessible icons. So I think that's super helpful.
Actually, it is really helpful. And as we're telling every client and every listener on this show, get it in your business profile. Like if you're wheelchair accessible, make sure it is mentioned like thoroughly.
You
and
know,
use this icon.
Years ago, and I don't know if the numbers are still true, but Vegas is considered one of the most accessible cities in the country because it's a fairly new city, and everything was built to the ADA spec, right? So when I did some research for Vegas, it was a $6 billion untapped industry. A lot of times when people hear accessibility, they think, oh, well, I just have to do these extra things, but I got to spend money. I'm not going to make money. And it's actually not true. In fact, Zappos developed a whole part of its e-commerce dedicated to people who have certain physical differences. Like they only have one foot, so why do they have to buy two shoes? Or they only have one arm. Can they get a shirt that doesn't have two?
Well, the disabled population is massive, and they have needs that need to be serviced. Absolutely.
Exactly. And so by putting this, making sure this shows up in your business profile means that people will be able to tell at a glance. They don't have to go to your about page anymore to see if you're handicapped accessible. And make sure you are, because if you're not and you post that, you could have legal issues.
Oh, indeed.
But yeah. But...
So lastly, maybe we got to get out of here pretty soon. If you saw a massive loss of links at Google Search Console, it's not you, it's them. Again, it's probably a bug. I mean, maybe you lost all those links. Maybe a big part of the web fell off the earth, too. But probably you didn't. It's probably a bug at Search Console, so don't freak out. It doesn't change how Google looks at your website.
It could be, if it turns out it's not a bug, I think it's a bug. But I did have a client who went to Marketing Live, the C-level edition, and they told all the executives they didn't need to invest in link acquisition or link anything anymore because Google doesn't use them, which is, 100% not true. And that's from the marketing people, not the SEO people. They did. Yeah, they did.
I mean, and by the way, links are well explained in the data dump for whatever reason. But even without the data dump, Google absolutely uses links.
Google is when they say they're not in the top three anymore, it's because they have like neural matching and rank brain up there too. So it's not. But anyway, you should know if your CMO or C-level came back from a Google Marketing Live event and said, we're told we don't need links anymore. You do. So just letting you know.
And if you saw a huge decline in Search Console, don't worry about it. They're probably going to get reported back again. And that's probably Google's fault, not yours.
Exactly. It's you, not me.
Okay, that's that. We've gone around the clock, and you know what? I'm really happy with the way we dealt with what is like probably the craziest, most sensitive story we've had in a long time.
I agree.
That was a tough one.
Yeah, it was a hard one. You know what? If we finish in this minute, we will be exactly 1 hour, and I don't think that's ever happened.
On behalf of Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls in Las Vegas, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. You've been listening to Webcology, recorded live to podcast on the 30th of May, 2024. Friends, don't fall for SEO myths, whether they be fresh or long-standing. Like Mike himself said in his essay on the data dump, use your gut, experiment, test things out, see for yourself. Be really kind to each other in the coming weeks. There's going to be a lot of people yelling at each other over this stuff. Don't
Yeah, don't
talk
get
about
involved.
ideas. Idea. It's all about ideas.
Principles, not people. I was taught at a very young age.
There you go. Principles, not
Yeah.
people.
Yeah.
Okay. So again, on behalf of Christine Schackinger, this is Jim Hedger. Have a great week. Be well. Rank well. Be kind to each other, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.